Ah, coming around to 8:43. Time is so tight, but we're going to squeeze a little thought with Ian Lennox. Ian, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm fine, thank you. How are you?
Excellent stuff. Would you like to estimate how much it costs to raise a child, approximately, according to a recent survey? We're going to find out about this from Justin Harper in about 5 or 6 minutes' time. How much would you say it costs to raise a child?
In terms of pounds per week?
Pounds. Just the whole sort of the annual cost of raising a child.
I would say...
It helps it's gone up 63% than it was 12 years ago, if that sort of helps, you know.
I think it put between £5,000 and £10,000.
Yeah, yeah. What do you say, Emma Timpson?
Surely it depends on how much you like your child.
Because,
I mean, yes. you could just give them a little dog bowl in the corner with some water.
You could, but you'd be sent to jail. And quite rightly so, it has to be said, you know. Jessica?
I agree with Emma. I think there's a lot of factors you have to consider, but I'd say
right,
maybe...
So we're considering things like food, hobbies, toys, education, school uniforms, books, stationery, trips, lunch, university fees, possibly childcare, etc. What's your ballpark figure?
The question is, when do you stop paying for your child? When are they not a child?
Okay,
anymore?
Well, we're looking primarily up to the age of 21, okay?
So we've still got a bit more time.
Ian, would you like to hazard a guess?
Well, I have.
Yes.
I don't see why they can't.
How much did you say?
I said between £5,000 and £10,000.
Oh, between £5,000 and £10,000. Yeah, I must pay attention. Jessica.
I'd say maybe £15,000.
£15,000. And Emma?
I don't know.
£229,251. £229,251 and rising is the average cost for raising a child per annum.
What are you buying?
Really?
Well, actually, and so on. So, yes, the annual cost has actually risen by nearly 2,000. Oh, that's the overall cost. So you can break that down into annual cost, etc., which works out 67,000 per month.
I suppose
67,000 per year.
You look at the category of toys. And think of that as
private schools and things.
This is all sorts of... Sorry, Jessica?
Does it include, bills as well? Like, sharing electricity?
Childcare, nursery, education, including school uniforms, books, stationery, trips, university fees, of course. That might hike things up. Well,
that definitely.
That. There we are. Anyway, Justin Harper will be talking about in a few moments. The Office of National Statistics predict that by the year 2022... which is a wee while away, half of all families will have just one child as a result of this.
Aww.
And the cost of a child report reveals that 1 in 10 parents admit that they are postponing having any more children due to financial concerns. Of course, if we were allowed to actually send them up the chimneys to actually sort of work for a living at the age of 4, then the problem would be solved. But that's by the by. Maybe it's a Victorian sort of strategy we could actually work towards.
People don't have chimneys now, are they?
There's always a flaw in the argument. Ian, I know you're delighted to know that Emma has come back from the Canary Islands and Jessica's back from Poland and her trip to Krakow and Auschwitz and so on. But the key question you want to ask Jessica is how far she reached in your wonderful... I think it was chapter 10.
A bit of light reading in Auschwitz, was it?
Well, yes. So how's it been going, Jessica?
It's still progressing. I'm probably third of the way through.
Third of the way through. Is that beyond chapter 10 then? No,
yes.
So what stage have we reached in the narrative? Would you like to just share with us?
Gentlemen
and players, in case you'd like to. Join in at home, you know,
wait,
see if you can read it
quickly.
If she
tells us what place in the narrative she's in, surely that's spoilers.
Exactly.
Do you think so?
Yeah.
Mm. You have to read it.
Well,
experience it. Some of our lovely listeners.
It is a really good book.
Going out to buy it.
Well, there you have it, you see. It's solid and sorted too. Ian, it's been quicker than normal because we were trying to sell you some double glazing and possibly some PPI claim back forms.
Yeah.
But, you know, obviously we haven't succeeded in terms of that. So, you know, clearly you need to leave your phone free so that you can actually sort of get, you know, people actually wishing you to sell you stuff at this time of the morning. It's just never stop from that point of view.
Well, when you're at home and, all day, I'm getting between 10 and 20 calls sometimes. So I had to...
just enough.
I put a sort of call check on it.
Exactly. You see a strange number, you think, it's not the middle of drive morning edition. It's just long. I'm not sure how you're going to react to the two latest questions. I think we'll probably drop this off next week, or we'll need to supplement them with a couple of others, because the response that Richard Fitzwilliams gave was actually unbroadcastable. That's anyway.
I did mention the 9 o'clock threshold, didn't I?
Yeah. So go on.
The wrong 9 o'clock, though.
For possibly the last time, because I'm not going to run it with any of the debut people. Well, I might try it with Williams.
Maybe we could alternate questions each week.
Yeah, perhaps. Mm. Perhaps so. But for the last time, on the two that we've been using, Jessica, go for it. For Ian Lennox, please.
Two questions. Yeah. Have you ever been chased by a wild animal?
Only an angry wife once.
Yeah.
When I was married.
I don't think that counts.
She threw a cup at me and it hit the wall and didn't break.
Do you want to go there, Ian, please?
No, just
let it go. Let it go.
Chased by a wild animal. I have actually been in Canada for quite a while. And I used to walk, we went out in the wilds, and you had to have a little bell in case you encountered a bear.
Oh my goodness.
And, I didn't encounter a bear, but I met. Yeah. We were given talks about the danger. The bears are absolute killing machines.
If
you get between them, they're young.
They're smarter than the average author.
The second question is have you ever tasted sour milk?
Yes, I have.
There we are, you see. And in return, Ian Lennox, you got it. Sweet Child of Mine, Guns N' Roses up next from LV, Justin Harper. It's caused a few surprises. The cost of raising a child, £229,251 and rising. Certainly, Jessica, caught you a little bit by surprise, didn't it?
Yes, it really did.
So let's go directly to LV's finest, of course, truly fantastic soul, who can maybe sort of put a bit more flesh on the bones of these particular aspects. That would be Justin Harper. Good morning, Justin. How are you?
Good morning. Fine, thank you.
So, the cost of education going up, obviously childcare going up, the cost of a child report from LV, some phenomenal figures here, which would probably, if you were thinking of having a family, they might sort of say, no, I don't think so. It's just out of our salary cap range.
Indeed, it's a real shock for many parents, and I've spoken to expectant and existing mums and dads, and it is a genuine surprise, and it's a very sobering amount, £230,000.
So we're trying to work out where this is coming from. Is it education and childcare and things from that point of view? Is it expensive toys?
We do look at every single area of which parents look after their children, but the two most expensive areas are education and childcare, and those two alone account for more than 60% of that figure.
Wow. That's a huge percentage.
Jessica, as you say, you're still under 21, so you've got a few more years to actually at least to take money from your parents, which is understandable, that sort of routine.
Taking advantage of that.
Precisely. So what are your thoughts on this particular survey?
Well, I'm very interested in it. Does it also include, bills as well, like sharing electricity and hot water or gas?
It does. It takes into account a share of those sort of household expenses, but also things like toys, recreation activities, food and so on. Everything involved in raising a child.
Okay.
My somewhat spurious suggestion sort of in the earlier part of the production was the notion that, well, if you can actually sort of put children to work at age of 4 or 5, as the Victorians did, they could probably offset the costings from that point of view. Now, that's not going to happen in the 21st century, but what is the solution, Justin? I mean, is it a case of, you know, we need to kind of, you know, look at ways in which grants and things can be available? Because, as you say, quite rightly, these kind of figures would be most off-putting for most people.
Absolutely. Parents are very practical at the end of the day. They're doing three things. First of all, they are actually cutting back on certain items, non-essential items such as holidays and recreation. So about two-thirds of people are actually actively not choosing to spend stuff. And increasingly, parents, mums and dads, are taking advantage of likes of low-cost brands and also voucher codes and discount schemes. But the third one, which has a real social impact, is they are putting off having children. And we do expect that by 2022, more than half of the families in the UK will just have one child.
Jessica.
This is all very interesting. Is it? Does this only apply in the UK, this these statistics, or is this...
Should we all emigrate, is I think what we're saying. Should we go back to New Zealand?
Yes, we do look at the UK, but and areas across the UK. The usual suspects, as you might suspect, are at the top of the range. So if you're looking to raise a child in London, that would be just a few pounds under the mighty $250,000.
Yes.
But it does vary, but it's still a massive amount of money. And that comes out of everyday household income.
Since this report was first commissioned in 2003 by LV, of course, figures climbed 128%. Do you see any ends to this, or do you think, no, it's continuing to go on an upward spiral?
Unfortunately, for prospective parents and those looking to grow their families, it's going to continue to rise. We have seen a few areas drop just marginally over the last year, the likes of food, the likes of clothes, but those too have been eclipsed by the rises in childcare and education. So, unfortunately, sad news, but it's going to cost more.
And are there ways in which, you know, conceivably allowing for those increases, people can budget and maybe look to make use of savings accounts or financial protection schemes that can maybe, say, offset these costs? So you've got things that not necessarily for a rainy day, but for, you know, child development can obviously sort of be put into place.
Indeed, there's a number of measures that parents can take, and if they are looking towards saving towards further education, then they have some time to build up a small nest egg. But even then, they're quite frightening amounts. So it is about budgeting on a day-to-day basis and making those pounds go a little bit further.
Justin, it's been quite a sobering thought in terms of that. I mean, those figures, once again, and just in case people were panicking, because it's not an annual cost of £229,251. That's the total cost. The annual cost.
It's from birth to 21. Yeah.
On that basis,
not all in one year.
Probably the only people who could actually have children would be Premiership footballers. But that's by the by, you know. And what would that do to society as we begin to develop? You know, you'd have to think, no, enough. You'd be into eugenics and all sorts of things. But we wrap up with two final questions. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition today, Justin Harper?
Yes, I have. Thank you very much. It's been a thrill.
Oh, I can see he's getting into the radio vernacular already. Coming up in the second hour, we'll be talking to Professor Sebastian Johnston to talk about the cure for the common cold. Sarah Gayton, with respect to Farmers on Film, will be with us, and William Sitwell with more gastronomic views. But Justin, maybe you'll return with more LV news and hopefully some good news. I mean, I think it's sobering news in terms of costing this, but maybe you'll also be able to bring us some LV news, which is good in the very near future.
I'm sure I can.
I've been tired of this thinking, so I've drowned it out by drinking. Tastes like a bitter pill, but I'll just wash it.
Hi, I'm Rachel from On Broadcast, and you're listening to Alex Lefchuk on the Midweek Drive.
Never heard so many bleeps on a news report from Sky before. So never mind, we're probably worth cheating for the 10 o'clock one just for that. But before we get to 10 a.m., we've got heaps of more goodies to go through. Of course, we have Jessica Ward in the studio. Emma Tinson has had to leave because she's got to do some serious academic stuff.
That's right.
Not, of course, that the Midweek Drive Morning Edition isn't packed full and jam-packed full of serious academic stuff, but that's by the by. You know, it's a whole routine. It's shorthand, and quite rightly so. Coming up next, as mentioned, from Imperial College London, we have Professor Sebastian Johnston talking about his own views with respect to some of those old, well, they're referred to as old wives' tales, things like the notion that chicken soup is good to actually cure colds. Have you heard about that?
Right. Yep.
May not be. You know, the fact that we have got ways of sort of preventing cold, all sorts of things. Anyway, that's Sebastian Johnston. He's up after Foreigner. Sneezes, sneezes, spread diseases is a well-worn maxim that frequently used to be used to, obviously, be part of the whole public health system. But whilst we might know that to be the case, there are other issues, such as eating chicken soup to beat a cold, feeding a cold, starving a fever, which may or may not be fact or fiction. To address that and a whole range of other factors, we're delighted to be able to welcome our Professor of Respiratory Medicine and Allergy at the National Heart and Lung Institute, Imperial College London. That would be the legendary Professor Sebastian Johnston. Good morning, Professor. How are you?
Morning, Alex. I'm very well, thanks.
Excellent. So, this particular aspect, some of the world's oldest myths on cold remedies answered. Are we getting to the stage in the 21st century where we can genuinely say we're close to curing the common cold?
Maybe sometime in the 21st century.
Okay. So what about these particular aspects of remedies? I mean, the notion of which much beloved of mothers the world over, I'm sure, chicken soup, ideal.
Yeah, no evidence that makes any difference, I'm afraid. And the same is true for pretty much the rest of the old wives' tales. The only one that's really been researched at all is whether exposure to cold increases your chances of catching a common cold or not, and the answer there is no. We know that common colds are more common in winter, but no evidence that actually being cold yourself or going outside into the cold gives you a virus infection.
Now, this survey commissioned by Coldzyme, which I think is a nice little play on the word enzyme, really, for those people who like the sort of basic biology study. In the top seven here, wrap up warm to avoid a cold. You mentioned that's a possibility. Honey helping a sore throat, or an apple a day keeps a doctor away. I mean, surely an apple a day keeps the doctor away. I mean, that's built into our psyche, isn't it, collectively?
It is, and I think there's some truth that eating a varied and healthy diet is good for you and probably does increase the robustness of your immune system, and it's your immune system that protects you from virus infection. So I think eating a varied and healthy diet, which would include eating plenty of fruit and vegetables, is likely to be good for you.
And perhaps also not going out with wet hair. That could be one which you still think might
not
be.
One that I personally believe in. I don't even think about going outside into the cold with wet hair. I do it frequently.
Well, you see, those of us who are follically challenged, Sebastian, we just don't have that option, but there we are.
That's
a different line.
Yep.
Celebrate and rejoice. Let's move on. Sue Royce is in the studio with us today. Now, Sue, you're particularly fascinated in this particular feature because of allergies, and you are a sufferer, I believe.
I am, yes. During the winter months, I'm quite nasty asthmatic. I pick up any colds or bugs going, and it takes me a very long time to really kick them. So I'd be interested to know, Professor Sebastian, what your best advice is with regard to actually staving colds off.
Well, morning, Sue. That's a good question, and it's actually what I do all my research about, because there's very good evidence that people with asthma have increased susceptibility to colds, and that when they get them, they can cause acute attacks of asthma. What can you do about it? The most important thing is to keep your asthma as well controlled as you can, because there's no doubt also that if your asthma is poorly controlled and you get a virus infection, the outcome will be much worse than if you got the same virus infection but your asthma was well controlled. So keep your asthma as well controlled as you possibly can using your regular preventer medications.
And when we move down from the wonderful village of Lincoln to the metropolis of London and we use the underground, I'm often sort of prone to actually remark, surely with all these people here, if you have colds and various other bits and pieces, it's going to sort of be a major sort of way in which it's caught. Is that also the case, Sebastian, in terms of can you actually catch a cold from others on the train if they're sniffling and sneezing and such like?
I'm sure you can, yes. I don't know that anybody's ever studied whether trains are particularly dangerous, but there's no doubt that you catch colds from other people who have got colds, and so close exposure to people who have got colds will certainly increase your risk. We ourselves have studied attendance at school, and there's no doubt that children returning to school from holiday leads to a peak incidence of colds a week or two after they return, and that's probably because they bring in viruses from places they've been to on holiday that are new to the community, and children are notoriously efficient at sharing viruses amongst each other. Six-year-olds are the worst, so avoid six-year-old children in the winter months would be a good maxim.
That's interesting you mention that, because I've often said that as an academic working in university spheres that you've got a kind of two or three... I mean, the classic freshers' flu is often sort of brought up in the first few weeks of September in terms of, oh, we're all going down with diseases and so on. I mean, is that another one of those things where it's the power of the hypochondriac working?
No, it's again bringing people together who are new to each other, and they will be sharing viruses. Teenagers and young adults at university will be pretty efficient at sharing viruses as well.
And we started off with a bit of an optimistic line that you suggested we might find a cure for the common cold sometime in the 21st century. Is that the case? Because surely it's one of medicine's last bastions and last frontiers to be conquered, really.
Yes, it's something that the scientific community has been working on for decades, and we certainly haven't got there yet. There are some things that you can take in terms of over-the-counter medications that are available. Obviously, paracetamol and aspirin will help reduce the symptoms when you do have a cold. Echinacea is a herbal remedy that has been shown to reduce the severity of colds when you get them, and may have some preventive action as well if taken regularly in the winter months. And there's a new product released late last year called Coldzyme, who initiated this survey. That is an enzyme that you spray into the mouth, and the idea there is that the enzyme will degrade viral proteins and help reduce the incidence of infection as well.
From the notion of an ounce of prevention being worth a pound of cure, to use metric imperial measurements as opposed to, I suppose, grams and kilograms these days, I would probably also say that I find selenium and zinc, actually, from a nutritional supplement point of view, quite beneficial, but that might just be my own anecdotal evidence coming across there.
There are plenty of people who are with you on that one, but there are also people who don't believe that either selenium or zinc actually have any benefit. There are studies which have reported benefit, but the difficulty is that, particularly with zinc, it's quite difficult to get adequate blinding of those studies because zinc has a characteristic taste, and so it's believed that the people who take the active compound in those studies may have a feeling they're on the active compound and may therefore report better symptoms. So it's a difficult area.
Well, that's interesting. Finally, Sue, you have two young children, of course. do you sort of subscribe to any of these cold treatments, again, in terms of the prevention? Does that echo your own experience?
Yes, well, I found it very interesting what you said about six-year-olds. My youngest is seven, so unfortunately I can't get away from little ones. In terms of children coming down with colds, because they can be notorious for, you know, not washing their hands and sort of sleeve wiping of their noses and various other disgusting habits, what is the best way to prevent children from spreading these things around to their fellow children as well as adults?
It's very difficult, as you say. Children have terrible habits in relation to hygiene. Hand hygiene is important. We know that viruses can spread by droplets in the air, and there's not much you can do about that other than increasing ventilation. But they can also spread by children wiping their noses, touching a desk or touching a door handle, and then you come along and touch the same door handle and touch your eye or touch your nose and you inoculate yourself. So hand hygiene is important, but beyond that, I'm afraid there's not a great deal we can do.
Mm-hmm. Sebastian, it's a genuine pleasure touching base with your good self today and finding out a whole range of fascinating scenarios. As you mentioned, obviously, Coldzyme commissioned the study. You can find out further information by simply going to imperial.ac.uk, Imperial College London, for your good self, and accessing details from that. Two final questions. Have you had a reasonably interesting and healthy telephonic link with us this morning on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition yourself?
I have indeed. Thank you. Yes.
And hopefully we'll connect with you again in the not-too-distant future. Professor Sebastian Johnston, we salute you. Many thanks indeed.
Thanks. Goodbye.
And away he goes. All right. So, Siren 107.3 FM, Lincoln's first community radio station's watch you're listening to. We didn't give you the weather forecast earlier, so we will now. It's 4 degrees centigrade for the high today, minus 1 degree centigrade for the lower. Cold and cloudy start with patchy mist and fog that will clear. I can see it clearing now. Slowly clearing through the day with possibly some sunny spells in the afternoon. Jessica Ward and Alex Levchuk in the Midweek Drive Morning Edition. I suppose, presentational chairs, really.
Mm-hmm.
Very good.
Very good chairs.
So, Carrie LeBurne, The Lady Sings, classic to contemporary jazz and other genres. We met up with Carrie, actually, at last year's Burley Horse Trials, and she was on our list of people to actually contact. She'll be joining us on next Wednesday's Midweek Drive.
Oh, yeah. Carrie.
That's Carrie LeBurne. And indeed, we'll also be featuring another young lady called Lindsay, who is the daughter of Sam Stone, who'll be coming along in person to join us in a couple of weeks' time from that boy.
Very exciting.
It keeps getting better, doesn't it? Ed Fortune from Starburst Magazine will also be online with us next week, as indeed will Jean Bruce Scott, of course, from Native Voices, and a whole heap of other systems as well. But your task at this particular moment, Jessica, is to make a decision. Should we actually play a Carrie LeBurne tune, which is actually originally done by Josephine Baker, and it's entitled J'ai deux amours, I have two loves, or China Crisis and Christian, where would we actually sort of send the listener?
I think it's very important to go to Carrie's songs.
I think so. We're going for Carrie's songs. It could be a cure for the cold. By the way, just referring back to Professor Sebastian Johnston there, eat chicken soup to beat a cold, feed a cold, starve a fever, eating origins stops you getting cold, don't go out with wet hair. I mean, he was very keen to say, I always go out with wet hair, he seemed to think. I don't know about that.
I've got very long hair. And
I don't want to get it wet and then exactly. Catch a cold. And
it's
who knows
freezing.
What, well, precisely.
I think the most important point he brought up was stay away from those six-year-olds.
Do you know, you're absolutely right. In fact, we should put that up. I mean, I know that Siren is for young people in the air, but really, if you're six, if you see a six, just run for the hills.
On dit qu'au-delà des mers, là-bas sous le ciel clair, il existe une cité. Oh, séjour enchanté. Et sous les grands arbres noirs, chaque soir, vers elle s'en va tout mon espoir. J'ai deux amours, mon pays et Paris. And that